How wonderful was that? A Better Man by Brian Kennedy, featured in his album of the same name back in 96. And speaking of which, I'm now joined on the line by Irish musician, singer-songwriter Brian Kennedy to talk about his music career, future gigs on the horizon, and as mentioned earlier, the whole of Northside today is dedicated to Brian in terms of music, playing a number of his greatest hits. A very good afternoon to you, Brian.
How are you getting on, Johnny? Nice to hear that on the radio. That's always good.
Oh, you're most welcome. Well deserved. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. It's a pleasure having you.
My pleasure. How's everybody on Northside? Are you all well?
Oh, we're all keeping very well. Enjoying the weather, even though we're stuck in the studio.
We don't know ourselves, do we? When the sun comes out in Dublin and Ireland especially, we just don't know ourselves. It's wonderful. I love it.
Absolutely. Brian, first of all, may I ask you to go right back, if you don't mind, to your very early childhood and tell us what inspired you to sing and become involved with music.
It's a funny story, you know. I mean, I think we all react to our environments, of course, but mine was very much a kind of a war environment, lots of bombs, lots of shooting, all of that kind of stuff. And then, therefore, lots of ambulances and fire engines. And honestly, one of my first memories is literally harmonizing with ambulance sirens. I don't know why I did it, but it was just, I mean, if there was a little film of my life, I think the opening scene would be this tiny little boy queuing up to go through a turnstile. To go like a kind of any kind of a ghetto through history. We used to boys, you know, men on one side, women on the other. And while I was standing in the usually pouring rain, not glorious sunshine, the ambulance siren would be the constant soundtrack. And I would think of harmonies to go with that siren. So it's a funny thing to do. So, but if that was an opening scene in a film, that's exactly what you would see.
Okay, so that actually influenced you very much with your music.
It must have I think, because I just had a propensity really for anything that was about melody, even if it was just two notes of an ambulance or anything like that, anything that had a few notes, I was captivated by something that had any kind of melody. So it's amazing to think that later on, as I grew up and became an adult, then that's what would be my job. Extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Any particular artists or bands who inspired you? Who were your favourites back then?
You know, I was talking about this last night. I was in Castlewellan last night doing a gig, and the more I thought about it, the more I realised it was really women artists. It was really people like Kate Bush, wee bit of Barbra Streisand, and then later on, Joni Mitchell became a real massive influence in terms of my guitar playing, tuning, the way I would construct songs. It didn't have to have an obvious chorus, things like that. Those kind of people. And then, of course, then a bit later on, Van Morrison was a massive influence because of all the years I spent on the road with him. John Lee Hooker, a little bit of that, a little bit of blues going on. A lot of soul music, a lot of Sam Cooke, Stevie Wonder, those kind of people. So whatever, I mean, the Falls Road was a hard place to get through to musically. So you had to be absolutely gigantic, like a bit of Meatloaf, you know, a bit of something like Elvis, any of those kinds of things that came through. But like I say, later on, it was certainly the women artists that really spoke to me the most profoundly, and particularly Joni Mitchell and Kate Bush, I would say.
Yes, and speaking of which, you actually teamed up with Joni and Van the Man, Bob Dylan, Ray Charles, John Lee Hooker, and many more.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing to think that I grew up and meet and work with those artists? I remember my Uncle Brian Kennedy, who was my uncle I was named after, he had a massive, amazing vinyl record collection. And all of the artists that we've just spoken about were in that collection. And little did I know, that was nearly like the future kind of waving at me to say, you're going to work with us when you get older. So Kate Bush I managed to meet and have dinner with a few times over the years when I sent her my very first album, just as a little thank you, really, because she'd been such an inspiration. Joni Mitchell, I toured with her and Van Morrison and Bob Dylan across America in 1998. And in fact, that was the last time she ever toured. So it was a great privilege for me to see that woman work up close. And you know, they say never meet your heroes. I would disagree, because I actually became a bigger fan of Kate, and particularly Joni Mitchell, when I met her and had chats with her about songs and singing and so on.
Yes, I envy you, Brian. I would have liked to have done that myself.
Oh, yeah. It's extraordinary. Who do you love, Johnny? Who's your big kind of, who's the person, if I looked in your collection now, Johnny, who would I find the most CDs or a record of?
Oh, you'd go back to Glenn Frey and the Eagles.
Yeah,
Bob Dylan and all that kind of thing. Hollow Notes, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful, all the best people. But interestingly,
Brian Kennedy, Brian Kennedy as well, of course.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. Brian, you busked, I beg your pardon, on the streets in Belfast way back in your teenage years. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, music really, for me, started on the street. If we think about, like I say, the sirens and all that stuff with the ambulances, that was on the street. And then it was a natural progression. Really, apart from little folk groups and things that I sort of dipped in and out of in terms of church every Sunday, really the most exciting place to try and make music was on the street. That's where people were. That's where the soldiers were. That's where it was difficult. That's where it was full of energy and life. But particularly when you're standing and are trying to get somebody's attention, trying to work it out in the freezing cold, your fingers are freezing, or let's say you get a blast of sun and it's too hot or things. It's just a brilliant, it's just a great kind of teaching for life in terms of later on. You get used to people either paying you great attention and giving you a compliment, or somebody throwing an insult at you to tell you to shut up, or, you know, so it's a dose of real life when you become a busker.
Yeah, were you nervous at all because of the troubles going on?
Always. Oh, yeah. It's always a nerve-wracking thing to do. I mean, I'm always even nervous now, but nervous in a good way, because it's anticipation nerves, you know. It's the kind of thing where you hope it's going to go well, you hope the sound is going to be good. You know, it's about anticipation these days. But in those days, it was...
In those days, you were nervous about getting blown up, you know.
All of that. Yeah. Nervous about being attacked, nervous about all of those things, absolutely.
Yeah. So when you were about 18, you moved to London.
I did. I was exactly 18 that summer. I'll tell you exactly when it was, because it's unforgettable. It was July 11th, 1985, because 2 days later, it was July 13th, and that was Live Aid, live from London. And I watched it on a TV in the back garden of a squat in Tottenham. That's where I first saw that Freddie Mercury performance, the U2 unforgettable performance, you know, those things. So 1985 is exactly when I turned 18. I was 18 years old, and an unforgettable summer, I have to say.
Okay, and you actually sung in underground stations for a living, and also to buy yourself a guitar, which was very brave.
The Dominion Theatre.
Yeah.
Tottenham Court Road was really the place that I went, because that was the one I knew the best. But you were taking your life in your hands going into there, because it was a very rough place, lots of skinheads around, lots of actually anti-Irish sentiment around at that time, if you think about it. In 1985, having a Northern Irish accent and a Falls Road previous address, I mean, I got detained at the airport loads of times, because of my previous address, until I became better known as a singer. Then I was able to say, oh no, here's my album, here's my stuff, and I'm a singer. But in those days, if you said to somebody you wanted to be a singer, they thought you were mad. You know, they would say to you, the next sentence would be, yeah, but what do you want to do for a living? And now, of course, it's the opposite. It seems like everybody wants to be famous or something in the public eye.
Yeah, and you were eventually discovered by the Spice Girls manager, Simon Fuller.
Yes,
would that be correct?
Simon Fuller. About a year later, I was 19, I was singing in a pub in a beer garden with a group from Northern Ireland called The Adventures. They had this amazing song, a big hit called Broken Land. Their manager and the girls in the office, in fact, came down to see them, and they heard me sing. I stood up and I sang Prince's Kiss, can you believe? Because Tom Jones had kind of reinvigorated that song. And they went back and told him, and he called me, and he said, look, I've heard lots of great things about you. Can you come and have a meeting? And that became the start of 13-year relationship with him being my manager on and off. And, you know, we had great success with A Better Man and things like that. So I'm very glad to have met that man in the end.
Yeah, well, he made the right decision, that's for sure. Tell us
well,
about
you
the...
Know, he has a habit of making the right decision, that man.
Yes, he does, actually. Yeah. Tell us about the Eurovision Song Contest, Brian, the one in Athens in 2006.
I believe that was. I was asked to represent Ireland. And I just remember thinking, really? God, you know, it's not something I would have ever considered before. But then I loved the idea that ultimately what I was doing was representing my country. And there are so few things you can do. And again, as a little boy growing up on the Falls Road in West Belfast, to think that I would become an adult and represent Ireland. Because for the longest time, you know, people really were intent on hammering it through your head that you were British, you weren't Irish, all of that stuff. So what a great... wonderful outcome that I grew up and I represent. Because the minute you land in Athens, I stopped being Brian Kennedy. I just was a country the whole time, which was they would say, oh, look, here comes Ireland. Hello, Ireland, how are you? You know, so it was a fantastic privilege to stand up there and know that the whole country were watching. And it was one of the last times we got in the final. So I did respectably well, I'll say, and I'm very proud. One of the campus moments in my career to date.
Yes, well, not only a wonderful performance, but also a beautiful tune that was written and composed by yourself.
Yeah, the tune turned out very well. Every song is a cry for love. It turned out great, that song.
Yeah, and you actually accomplished, you know, a great position, like 10th.
Yeah, number 10, not
which is
bad,
fantastic.
Not bad at all. And one
Absolutely.
Of the last times we were ever in the final, I'm sort of glad and embarrassed to say. But, you know, it's all to play for. Hopefully we'll have a resurgence and become great again.
Absolutely, absolutely. You performed with Secret Garden with the original version of You Raise Me Up.
If people don't know that out there, I'm the very first person ever to have recorded You Raise Me Up, and I suppose most notably at Georgie Best, the celebration of his life and the funeral that took place in 2005 in November. And in fact,
in the church,
you should mention that, because I'm going to China in September to tour with Secret Garden, and I'm going to be singing, of course, You Raise Me Up and a few other tunes with them. So I'm just so proud of that collaboration with them, and I hope to do a lot more if I get a chance.
Yeah, you must feel very proud. I mean, that was since recorded by more than 100 other artists.
Well, more than 1,000 now, actually.
Probably, yeah.
Add another zero onto that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
More than 1,000 artists have now recorded that. So, yeah, I'm very proud to say that I'm number one. If people are listening at home, if you go onto YouTube and have a look at You Raise Me Up, the story of it, you'll see absolutely the whole journey involved. And the very first ever public performance of it was me singing in Norway on a television show out there.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. You must be very proud. And Josh Groban, he had huge success in the US with it, and also Westlife.
He had a number one with it, and he was very kind to me in the sense that he heard me singing it when he was in a taxi in Dublin, and my version came on the radio, and he was really struck by it, apparently. And he says this on his website, that when he got home then, he thought about recording it, and when he got home, two other people had sent it to him to say, you should record this. So yeah, as much as I'm delighted for him, of course I would have liked to be the number one in America, thanks very much, but anyway, you can't have everything.
Oh no, definitely not. You still deserve the credit for the initial release.
Yeah, I know, I'm delighted to be associated with it, and that song has been very good to me.
Yeah. Brian, back in 2008 you joined the judging panel of City Beat Young Star Search. That's Northern Ireland's biggest kids talent search. Mm-hmm. How did you find that?
Well, it's always difficult to be a judge in anything. As you know, I also did The Voice of Ireland on Series 1, and I've just recently finished a slot for Eurovision, the Children's Eurovision, in Irish as Gaelic. So I have a bittersweet relationship with it. I love being able to bring my experience to the floor, to the experience, but at the same time, I'd much rather just sing. However, I wished I'd had something like that when I was a kid. So I love being able to big up kids and say to them, look, you know, if this is what's in your heart, you go for it. You don't let anybody talk you out of it. So I love the fact that there are so many young people interested in making music and playing an instrument and making music their career. So I'm proud to be a part of that too.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what would be your advice to young talented musicians and singers out there looking for a break? But you've just mentioned it. You've just said it.
I would just say, don't let anybody talk you out of it. Just get on with it. And don't be, if anything, if you're knocked back, then just consider that experience and build from it and get up and make yourself stronger from it. So, yeah, I would say absolutely that. But I think the pressures are different these days with those TV shows. But, you know, somebody's listening now and they're thinking about doing it, just do it. Just follow your heart. Simple as that.
Absolutely, I thoroughly agree with you. You were also coach and judge on the first series of The Voice of Ireland.
Yes.
How did that go?
That went well. I mean, it was the first of its kind in Ireland, so it was an inaugural thing, really. But ultimately, I love the fact that we didn't see the singers until the chairs turned around. But, I mean, again, as much as I enjoyed that, I would much rather actually be doing the singing than the judging. So it was I just reinforced my brilliant friendship with Sharon Corr, of course, and I've known her for years. Bresley became a new friend, all of that. So I loved being part of it. It was a fantastic production. But ultimately, you know, it reminded me again that really what I want to do more than anything is perform and sing, you know.
Yes, of course, I understand. You've had a string of album releases. The first one released, I think, was in 1990, The Great War of Words.
27 years ago.
Tell us about your albums.
There are nearly... I mean, I'm just about to release a triple album in August, and it's a double live CD and a DVD from Vicar Street from last year. I had a 50th birthday and a big kind of celebration of A Better Man, the album turning 20. So we played it in sequence.
Okay.
Coming out in August, and that'll probably be my 14th or 15th album and all of that. So yeah, it's been quite a journey in the last 25 years or so. I love making records. I love putting them out there. I love promoting them. It never gets easier. It actually gets harder, I think, the more you know about making records. So I love doing it. It's a great privilege, really, in this day and age to make music for a living. And long may it continue. I just really love to do it.
Yeah, and you've had 14. I think your next one will be your 15th.
I think that's right. I lose count after 10, you know, but I think it's in the double digits now, for sure.
Yeah. Which album would have been your favourite? Or even which single?
That changes with the wind, you know. Sometimes I it's nice to be reminded. If I hear an old recording, I go, oh, God, yeah, I remember that. I mean, the first album will always be special because it was the first time. The first time you do anything is special. So that stands out because it was a great achievement for, I suppose, somebody like me from the Falls Road to get to sign to RCA, you know, the same label as Elvis, and I get to put out that record. A Better Man stands out because it was a great commercial success, and that was the first time I'd had a proper number one, things like that. I'm very proud of all of them in different ways, but yeah, those two records stand out for sure.
Yeah, what's amazing really is there are many tracks on your albums that they were not single releases, but still
exactly,
very popular tunes among your fans.
Yeah.
Which says a lot.
What it tells me is that people really listen to the whole album, because it seems with Spotify and all of these kind of websites that songs are kind of singled out rather than part of an album concept. When I'm making albums, I always think of it as a whole concept rather than single songs. And it seems a shame that people single out too many things. But that said, as you say, there are people out there who sometimes say to me to play a really kind of, you know, a track that I hadn't played for years that I didn't realise was so important to some people. So it's great that happens.
Yeah. Songwriting, Brian, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Do you have to be in the mood, or can you just go out there, decide I'm going to write a song and just go and do it?
I mean, I think they say it's like 90% perspiration, 10% inspiration. Sometimes they say that. It's a funny thing. It's a hormonal thing nearly. Sometimes you'll work away at something and nothing comes of it, or suddenly you'll just do a really quick little idea and it becomes a major chorus. You know, lots of my favorite songs were written pretty quickly, really. And then others are, you might spend years just letting it percolate and eventually you finish it. So it really depends on the song. It depends on, it's never the same. That's why I'm saying it actually becomes more difficult, because it's like when, I think it's Quincy Jones who talks about, you know, when God walks through the room and all these lovely analogies. But honestly, I think it's something you can't actually give words to. It's really about the feeling of it. The temperature in the room changes. Something special happens.
Yes.
And it could be the same three chords you've always played all week, but something happens with the intensity in one go, and all of a sudden you have a song.
Ignition.
That suddenly speaks to you in a different way. It's a very difficult thing to really nail down.
Okay. And is it lyrics over melody, or vice versa, or perhaps a bit of
it depends.
Both?
Sometimes
depending on
if I have
the mood.
A title to start with, that's a really good thing. Sometimes I'll just, like with Christopher Street, that song, I just had that little guitar riff, really. Things like that. So it really depends on the, it's different every time. That's what's so incredible and exciting about it.
Okay, and your next album, will it include any new songs?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. The next release in August is the Triple Live record DVD. But actually, what I'm thinking of doing and cooking up is actually I'm going to make a proper Christmas record. I've never done that before. So I'm thinking about doing that. There'll be an original song on there called Christmas Morning. But then we're going to just investigate the back catalogue of amazing Christmas songs, Joni Mitchell, all those kind of things. But yes, I certainly would plan another original album, probably really at this point for next year, rather than this year. So there'll be two records out this year, the live record in August and then the Christmas album in December.
Wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
I'll make sure you get a copy, Johnny.
Oh, thank you very much indeed, and we'll get it included in here on the radio station, of course,
and give it lots
of promotion for you.
These
days with Ronan Keating. Now,
yes.
I've a whopper of a question for you. Yeah, 1999. A whopper of a question, because it's killing me. It's killing me. No matter how much research I've done on this, we've worked out that Ronan wrote the lyrics, but who actually composed it?
No, neither of us wrote the song. Ronan didn't have anything to do with the composition of that song.
Not even the lyrics.
Not even the lyrics.
Right. So
it was a song that came up that at the time Simon Fuller was managing a duo. If you look at the credits, you'd have to find out exactly who wrote it. But it was a duo who were producers who were working with Spice Girls and all kinds of people in S Club 7 at the time. And they had this song called These Days, and they thought it would be perfect. They just thought it would be perfect for me. And Ronan had always said to me, oh God, we must do something over the years together. And we'd done things socially in terms of singing at parties and gigs and things, but we'd never done a recording. And then I thought that song would be perfect. So I sent it to him. He loved it. We recorded it really quickly in an afternoon. And then the rest is history. We were stuck at number two, though, for ages. You know what kept us off number one? Remember that song, Blue? I'm Blue, dot and dee, dot and da, that thing.
Oh my God,
that kept
yes.
us off number one for like 4 weeks. But it was a platinum-selling single, so that's not for that.
Yeah, no, it's not. How did you find working alongside Ronan?
Easy. He's very straightforward. We were mates from before, so it's always fun to work with your friends. I've done that with Eddie Reader, and as you know, in the collection that we sent you there, I have a duet of Christopher Street with Boy George. That was, I mean, I've been very lucky to collaborate with all kinds of different people. So I love the you know, how different people are in the studio. Ronan was very easy to work with. Boy George was fantastic to work with. Van Morrison, amazing to work with. Eddie Reader. I mean, a very long list of people that I admire, and so lucky to work with people I really like. So it's fun to work with somebody. I mean, Ronan being such a pop star in the sense that the Boy's own thing and everything, I'm not really in that world, but at the same time, we found a common ground and we were able to do that duet. Same with Boy George, same with anybody else that I've worked with. I love collaborations because it should bring out the best in both artists, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. Now you have a string of shows coming up very soon. You had Castlewellan last night, which you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
You have Boyle Arts Festival on the 22nd of July.
That's right.
You have the Empire and Swords, which is that's right in the heart of our vicinity here.
That's really soon, actually.
Yeah, that's on the 28th.
Yeah, that's very, very soon. Do you know that venue at all?
Oh, yes, it's in our vicinity here on Dublin's northeast.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
Well, I look forward to seeing everybody at that. I mean, I have the show that I do is very much a kind of a interactive show. I tell lots of stories. I chat to the audience. I do a lot of singing at all. And also, I walk through the last 25 years of singing, of songs. So each show is completely different. I can't believe how many songs there are to choose from now. And I'm just fascinated by at what point the audience discovered me as an artist, you know. So I really look forward to getting to Swords, especially because it's a venue I've never played before. I'm hearing great things about it. So, you know, ultimately, I'm a live performer. You're only as good as your last performance. And so I love to perform as much as I can.
Yes, yes, yeah. Okay, and you're heading to Scotland in August.
Yeah, I'm making a return to the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh. I've played it for the last 5 years in a beautiful venue called the Gilly Doo. I love it every year. It's just brilliant. I'm doing 3 nights at that venue. Have a look on my website for exact details. So yeah, making a great return there. I'm going to do the live A Better Man show there. So I'm going to play A Better Man in sequence in its entirety for those 3 nights there. And then, as I say, later on, I've got other gigs around Ireland. And then I go to China in September, and on it goes. There's gigs coming up all over the place. It's great.
Okay. Well, finally, just for the sake of our listeners, Brian, and your fans, what hobbies are you involved with outside and away from the music? Everybody's curious to know.
I mean, I'm kind of obsessed with interior design. I love, you know, rearranging paintings and furniture and reimagining rooms in my house. And I love decor. I love making a room beautiful. I love cooking for my friends. I love choosing nice wine for mates or nice beers, whatever it is, whatever people like. I love a margarita. You know, so I love things that are very much about the senses. I love great food. I also love going to the gym. I train with Paul Byrne and Body Byrne a lot. Things like that are passions rather than hobbies, I suppose. But yes, all of the good stuff.
Good food,
good friends, yeah, good atmosphere.
The simple life as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Brian, we have actually run out of time, and you know what? I actually wanted, whilst we're playing all your songs, your greatest hits during the whole programme for the 2 hours, I still wanted to squeeze in You Raise Me Up just before the end of this slot, before the
great
break, but
please
I can't.
Do.
So we're going to have to bring in the promos on the break and play it after that. And of course, a few more of your tunes as well. So, Brian,
thanks so much for your support, John.
No, you're most welcome. You're a credit to the country. We are all very proud of you.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind.
And it was a pleasure having you on.
I'm proud to be part of this country, I tell you. What a great country we are.
Yeah, we are indeed, actually, I have to say. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. All the best and have a great
Up
weekend.
North side, as we say.
Hope your gigs go well for you. All the best.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.